Imagine you're looking at a balancing scale with everything you do for other people on one side and everything you do for yourself on the other side. If it isn't balanced, maybe it's time to spend a little more time on you. And therapy is a great place to start. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online who can help you find that balance and stick to it. Visit betterhelp.com/positive to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/positive.
Facts are facts. Like how contributing to employees' financial security makes them want to work harder for their company. In fact, according to a 2023 study by Principal, 87% of employers say that better employee financial security means employees are more engaged and productive at work. The fact of the matter is that employees want to feel financially secure in their future. So consider this. Principal helps you invest in your employees by providing customized benefits and retirement plans to help keep your employees more engaged and productive. When you take care of your team, they take care of business. That's a fact. Learn how Principal can help you find the right benefits and retirement plan for your team at principal.com/benefits. Products and services offered by member companies of the Principal Financial Group, Des Moines, Iowa. For important information, visit principal.com/disclosures.
Oh, summer. I don't want to say it's like we barely knew ye, because I've spent the whole summer wanting it to go faster. It's my fault. It really is my fault. But now that it's nearly done, now it kind of smacks you upside the head, because we've got just one more unofficial weekend of summer. It's kind of funny. I texted a friend of mine about how summer was coming to an end. She said, oh no, is today the first day of fall? Not quite. We still have a few more weeks to go, but the difference is the routine. The summer routine is about to be in the rearview mirror. In fact, I've got a bunch of kiddos that I teach on Sundays at church, fourth and fifth graders, who start school today or tomorrow. Some of them don't start till after Labor Day, but yeah, a bunch of them are going back to school already. My mom's already been in school now for 2 weeks, and her eighth graders, oh, they're driving her batty. But the routine is what really dictates the difference between summer and fall. Regardless of when it hits, once you settle into the school, or in our case, the work routine around football, it's just different. It really is different. Vacations are pretty much over. Not that you can't take a vacation anytime on the calendar, but it tends to be more pre-Labor Day, right? We now have 9 days, nine, until the NFL season opener on Thursday, September 7th. Milk these next 9 days for all they are worth. I know I will be out for an extended Labor Day weekend, the last hurrah until the holidays. That's it. I'm not taking any more time off until the holidays. So I got to stockpile it around the holidays because, well, it's not just Christmas this year. It's other events on the calendar. But yeah, 9 more days until football runs my life. Well, football and the dog. Football and the dog run my life for the last, gosh. I adopted Penny in March of 2012. I don't know that I thought about how long she would be running my life, but here she is on insulin now for more than a year and a half. Can't hear a darn thing. The poor dog. I actually feel terrible for her. I know that pets, they tolerate physical challenges, pain, a lot differently than humans. But I feel badly for her. The dog follows me everywhere. The second I leave the room, she follows me because she needs to know where I'm going and what I'm doing at all times. She can't hear me. So instead, she either smells me or sees me. And since I don't smell, she follows me around the house. Her latest thing, Jay, I forgot to tell you this. She knows that I go in the bathroom and I stay in there for a while. She figures that out, whether it's shower, whether it's getting ready for work, whatever it is. So my bathroom's not that big. She now crowds in there with me and sleeps on one of the mats. So it's either the mat in front of the sink and the cupboard, not cupboard, what's it called? Vanity. in front of the vanity with the drawers and the doors, so I can't open either. Or she sleeps in front of the shower on the bath mat. Lately, she picks whichever one I need to use the most, of course.
Oh, of course.
Right. So this is what happened. Oh, gosh, it was last week. It cracked me up. I got up and I left downstairs, and she doesn't like it when I leave downstairs and go upstairs. She immediately has to follow, right? She's slower, but she has to follow up the stairs. I get in the shower and all of a sudden I see this nose. So the dog has poked her nose in the back of the tub through the shower curtain.
Oh,
so that she can figure out what I'm doing in there. So first it's her nose. I laughed out loud, right? Because it was so funny. I'd never seen my dog stick her nose behind the shower curtain to kind of figure out what was happening in there. Then when, I don't know, I guess she couldn't figure it out with just her nose. All of a sudden her entire head is behind the shower curtain and she's trying to figure out what's going on in there. Funny thing is, she hates water. So if I accidentally drip a little water on her, she gets up, she scrambles up, and she runs away. But almost every time I take a shower now, the dog is parked on the bath mat. So of course, I nearly break a leg trying to get out, trying not to slide, because I don't want to wake her up or make her move, because it's hard for her to get up, to stand up. And so instead, I try to step over her out of the shower. Oh, yeah. Very graceful, extremely dangerous. And then if I drip even a couple of drops of water on her, that's it. She's got to go find the new place.
Oh, she gets mad?
Well, she doesn't get mad, but she doesn't like it. She's not a big fan of water. She doesn't like sprinklers. For as long as I've had this dog, whenever there's a sprinkler going in the morning during our walks, she will go out in the middle of the road and walk around the sprinkler.
Wow.
So she doesn't have to walk on the sidewalk. At the beach, loves the sand. Sand is like snow, and it's her best friend. She rolls in it. I'm getting sand out of her coat for weeks, but does not like the water.
And her in the bathroom is just because she needs to be near you. See, my dog
right,
goes
because she
the
doesn't know where I... She can't hear me.
Yeah,
so
right.
she knows that if she parks herself in the bathroom, I can't get past her. So she'll at least know what I'm doing and where I am at all times.
My dog hangs out in the bathroom sometimes because it's a tile floor in the summer.
It's cool, cooler.
So he lays on it. But
right.
Benny's laying on the mat. So yeah, that's directly.
Well, sometimes. Here's the funny part. I come home in the mornings now. I get home and all the bath mats in the bathrooms are messed up. So both bath mats.
Wow.
In the upstairs bathroom and the one in the downstairs bathroom. It's almost like she's bunched them up. I can hear her kind of digging at them and bunching them up so that she can then kind of plop down and she makes a pillow out of them.
So she goes in there even when you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just her new spot.
Right, it is apparently. But when I leave the bathroom and go into the bedroom, then she follows me in there.
Yeah.
So it's essentially her following me everywhere. And I do feel bad because imagine if you couldn't hear anything and all you could do was see. Thankfully, she still has her sight, because I have a friend whose dog was diabetic who lost both hearing and sight within months.
Gosh.
But Penny can still see real well. And she can't hear. Well, she feels vibrations on the floor and she can't hear really loud noises. But I try not to yell and try not to make really loud noises. Anyway, yeah, all that to say, Penny's still running my life. And now it's a completely different experience with a dog who's nearly 14 and diabetic with chronic bronchitis and very little hearing.
And blocks your exit out of the shower.
And blocks my exit. However, the dog, happy as a clam, still so full of joy.
Well, that's all that matters.
Yeah, she's a good girl. I love her dearly. So she's worth every bit of effort. She and football will be in charge of my routine and my schedule coming up very soon. I've tried to warn Bob. I don't think he gets it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Even so, until then, Major League Baseball has got to rule the roost. I'm sorry. Major League Baseball is about to get schluffed to the side, so we might as well give baseball its due while we still have the opportunity. Oh, so the Boston Red Sox, they're probably tired of seeing teams like the Dodgers and now the Astros into Fenway Park.
Red Sox lead it 2-1, top of the third inning at Fenway Park. Here's Altuve to lead things off against Chris Sale and sends one to deep center field. Back on to Duvall, and that is off of the center field wall. And Altuve races to second base with a leadoff double. A banger by Altuve to get things going for the Astros.
2-0. Ground ball left side, past Devers, past Story, and then a left a base hit. Jose Altuve, 2-for-3. Pitch on the way. And Altuve hits it in the air pretty deep to center field. That sends back Duvall, still going back. He leaps, and it's off the monster. Around third, and coming home now is Diaz. Peña right behind him. He will score as well. Altuve in the third with a two-run triple. 1-1. And Altuve rips it deep to left field, and that is over the monster. A two-run home run and a cycle for Jose Altuve. Astros lead is 13-4.
You're kind of thinking about it, but you don't want to get out of your approach. So you're just looking for a good pitch to hit, and, you know, hopefully it happens.
That's Jose Altuve. First career cycle for him. And his last at bat produced a home run. That was how he completed the cycle on AT&T Sportsnet Southwest. With my apologies to this incredible feat for Jose Altuve, who is at some point headed to the Hall of Fame. He goes 4-for-6, 4 runs, 4 RBI, the 8th inning home run. My favorite part of that entire montage with Steve Sparks and Robert Ford on Astros radio is the clang off the Red Monster. It's so good.
And Altuve hits it in the air pretty deep to center field. That sends back Duvall, still going back. He leaps, and it's off.
The Green Monster is classic. There's nothing else like it. It's a fixture that stands alone in Major League Baseball, a feature that stands alone in baseball. It's just got the best noises, too. Bang off the Green Monster. Jose Altuve and the Astros, they win on Monday night, but they stay a game back of the red-hot Seattle Mariners.
Mueller ready, and the next offer to JP, swinging a fly ball deep in it, right center field, out of the run, Butler to the 20-track wall, goodbye baseball! He did it again! JP Crawford with another leadoff home run, his 12th home run of the season. Here's the send, and the 1-1 on the way to Julio, swinging a drive deep into center field, Butler going back, looking up, goodbye baseball! Into the pen, Julio Rodriguez with his 24th home run of the season. 3 RBIs on the night. It's now the Mariners 6 and the A's nothing.
Oh, yeah. Julio Rodriguez is the catalyst, but he's not the only one who's raking right now. This is the top offense in all of baseball. And for that reason, they have won 12 of 13, and they remain perched atop the AL West. If you missed my conversation with Daniel Kramer, he joined us from, actually, he wasn't still in the press box, but he was still at the stadium at T-Mobile Park. He was still finishing his work after what was a later game, East Coast time, between the A's and the Mariners. It was a shutout. So we talked not just about the hitting, but also about the pitching and how it's built for October. 37,000 plus fans there on hand in Seattle. And to hear him talk about the energy and the electricity is a lot of fun. Julio Rodriguez, he scuffled for the first half of the season, as did the Mariners, but that is not the case any longer. Another 4 hits for him, as well as a home run. Scott Servais sees the pressure on his shoulders, but man, he is outperforming expectations in this latter half of the season.
It's not just the speed. It's you know, hitting the ball hard, hitting the ball over the fence. Everything he's bringing to our ball club right now, it's just been fantastic.
One game lead over the Astros and the Rangers. This, by the way, came at the expense of the Oakland A's, who are one of the worst teams in baseball. But boy, they got company now in the AL West. Oh, by the way, I'm not sure if you know this. This actually caught my eye earlier, and I forgot to mention it. The A's are officially eliminated from playoff contention. So they are the only team that cannot make the playoffs. The Angels are going that way. It's not quite as bad yet. But they can't seem to buy a win right now. Even against the Mets. Jay, I'm kind of glad we did not go to the Sunday game between the Mets and the Angels. I know we were solely going to see Shohei Ohtani, but he went 0-for-4, and I'm all right with the fact that we didn't spend money on that game.
Yeah, I think that was a good miss there.
A missed opportunity, if you will. Speaking of Shohei, he does continue to hit. His manager, Phil Nevin, he's got a lot on his plate right now. The team is tanking. They're going the wrong way. But mostly Shohei Ohtani, who's got the tear in his UCL. Not sure what the treatment will be, if it's surgery, but some details of the injury and when it might have happened from Nevin on MLB Network Radio Sirius XM.
His last four or five outings, probably he's, you know, people want to talk about, well, how could they keep pitching? There was nothing wrong with his elbow. There was never a complaint on the elbow. He had some fatigue. He had a finger cramp. He had lower body cramps. Those were the things that we were dealing with before. Skipped a start on, you know, kind of his NR's recommendation as we stopped, you know, we sat down with it. His bullpen sessions before his last start were really good. He came out in the first inning of the game last week and was throwing as well as he has all year. And then the second inning, you just saw a couple pitches where the velocity dipped, and then I saw a breaking ball that didn't just look right. I looked at the numbers, and it was about 8 to 10 inches less. So I took the trainer out to the mound, and he told me that he was having some soreness but not hurt. Really felt like he was just, you know, more fatigued than anything. And when we went underneath, he pointed to a couple spots, and then we went and had he actually asked us, you know, we recommend the MRI, and he agreed to it this time and went in, and we saw the damage. So unfortunate, but it is part of baseball.
Manager Phil Nevin of the Angels, a bit of a timeline there, but we only knew about the fatigue. He only knew about the arm fatigue, and at some point, maybe the fatigue, the wear and tear kind of added up, and it was an angle that put too much stress on the ligament or a pitch that put too much stress on the ligament. And so then with the MRI, they noticed the tear. They found the tear, and yet he went out and I think a double in the second game of that two-game set on whatever day we found out about the injury last week. So he continues to hit. The Angels, they're at this point a lost cause, or they're at least on life support. And who knows what happens with Ohtani now, or how much money he makes, or where he goes, or whether or not he even gets the surgery right away or waits. Last we knew, he was getting second opinions. All right, we're looking ahead to the start of the NFL season, and we're asking you, which team is the last to get a win? Not which team is going to win the Super Bowl. Nope. Let's dial it back a little bit. Let's pump the brakes, if you will. Which team in the NFL is the last to get a win? I gave you some options earlier, some teams that I think might struggle out of the gate for various reasons. So find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page. Good morning to you. It's Tuesday.
This is Upper Hand Fantasy.
What about J.K. Dobbins? I think he's going to be the breakout running back of 2023. I love the fact that he's a year removed from a bad injury. I love his price at the 4-5 turn. I'm happy with him as my RB2, but I do think he has RB1 upside, man. I think he is a dark horse candidate to lead the league in rushing. I think he has a talent. He has a great offensive line. He's averaging 5.9 yards per carry so far over his career.
Upper Hand Fantasy, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
With Serena retiring, people consider me the next leader or something of tennis, and I don't really put my... I don't put myself in that box, because Serena's the GOAT for a reason. It's greatest of all time. That's what the word means. And I'm part of all time, so I don't know if I'll be able to go as far as she did. That's the dream.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Coco Gauff is still a teenager. She has a long career ahead of her if she remains healthy and chooses to stay in the arena. But won in Cincinnati last week and now is on stage at the U.S. Open. Needs three sets to get through her first match on center court. But it came on a significant date, and there was a ceremony that took place in New York on center stage, Arthur Ashe Stadium Court. on Monday night. And while it did delay the start of the Novak Djokovic match, you can imagine why fans were happy to stick around. Number one, they got to see a tense opener for Coco Gauff, but also the ceremony honored 50 years of equal pay in prize money for the men at the U.S. Open and for the women. And for Coco Gauff, who's a teenager, who is realizing the benefits of the pioneers who came ahead of her, who made sure that this was pushed through a half century ago. Think about what U.S. soccer has gone through, the transformation in the last year with the women earning equal pay. It's been 50 years at the U.S. Open. So pretty incredible. And Billie Jean King, a major part of that. She's always there. She had big smiles. She was part of the ceremony. But for Coco Gauff, it's significant, as she tells, well, as you hear her on U.S. Open Tennis TV.
I'm really, really happy to be a part of this organization. And I'm truly thankful for Billie Jean King and the Original Nine for all the work that they've done to push women's tennis and women's sports in general. So I was happy to be, you know, I'm happy to play here on the 50th anniversary of Equal Prize Money, and hopefully, you know, we can continue to work and get that up for all the levels on the sport.
I appreciate Coco Gauff, but as you can imagine, as a teenager, she's only known it one way at the U.S. Open and for the USTA, which is the U.S. Tennis Association. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I always appreciate it when younger athletes recognize those who had a different experience, a more challenging experience, a tougher experience, one that was more fraught with resistance and adversity. And that was certainly the case for those women who fought for equal prize money. Again, U.S. women's soccer only recently getting the same honor from our parent organization, from the parent organization here in the United States. And I would encourage you to think about it maybe from a different perspective. For those of you who think pay should be tied to revenue, meaning U.S. men's soccer earns a lot more money in terms of TV viewership and the fans who show up, yada, yada, yada. If you believe that pay should be tied to revenue, maybe think about it this way. The players themselves can't control what the TV broadcast deals look like or how many fans show up to their matches. They also can't control capacity and where they play. So if you don't consider the disparity between the size of the stadiums or the size of the venues where women's teams play versus men's teams, then you're kind of missing out there. The players can't control that. They can't control whether or not fans show up. What they can do is put in the same amount of work, an equal amount of blood, sweat, tears, determination, hours of practicing, dedication over years. And for that reason, and in order to level the playing field and give them the best opportunity to be successful, they should have access to the same fields, the same resources, the same travel accommodations. To build a winner a lot of times requires investment. And the U.S. women's soccer team, going back now a couple of decades, has succeeded despite, in some cases, dangerous field conditions, travel accommodations that were stressful or created issues. It's not about the pay as much, though there is a level of respect that comes with equal pay. But in earning equality from U.S. soccer, in earning equality from the governing body of the sport, they also earned equal resources. Again, the same types of food and nutrition, maybe athletic trainers, field conditions, travel accommodations. These all make it easier. Well, easier is the wrong word. These all can lead to a greater level of success. Now think about tennis. Women and men. Certainly there are some high-profile women's tennis players that have made headlines, grabbed the headlines, kept the headlines, like Serena Williams, like the Williams sisters. They were definitely equal to any of the men's players in terms of name recognition, high-profile matches. Remember when Serena was playing her final few matches there at the U.S. Open? The ratings were off the charts on TV. But for the most part, that doesn't matter. What matters is that they're treated equally. What matters is that they have the same access to resources. And yes, equal pay. Their fight was just as tough. So I appreciate the USTA and certainly the US Open for recognizing that the women put the same effort and time. They battled just as hard. And it can't really control who shows up, who doesn't, whether or not it's on TV, what time the matches are. That's all out of their control. But everything that they have a hand in, well, you know, there's no challenging their dedication, their determination, the effort they put into it. And that's really where the pay comes from. They're competing just as hard. They're putting and pouring into it just as much as the men are. It's a level of respect. Respect what the women are doing the same as we respect what the men are doing, regardless of who's paying attention or whether or not the TV ratings are big, blah, blah. 50 years. You want to talk about progressive in tennis. It's had some incredible pioneers who have led the way and refused to give up the fight. And Coco Gauff and other younger tennis players, this is all they've ever known. Which is not the case in a lot of sports where you have the men's and women's version. One more, and this is Novak Djokovic, who's back in New York for the first time since the final in 21, which he lost, by the way. He's thrilled. You can see it on his face, his excitement level, certainly the way that he played in the opening round, a straight set victory. But also, he lights up talking about New York in the U.S. Open.
It is the biggest stadium we have in tennis. This court has seen so much history and so many battles. And everyone knows in tennis that the night sessions at Arthur Ashe are definitely the most exciting, fun, loud, energetic sessions you can have out there on the tennis world. So it's the size, it's the echo because of the roof, construction, it's everything combined. And just people, New Yorkers love their tennis. They don't care if they stay up very late, post-midnight, because they get excited. And I love it. I mean, it's great because every Grand Slam has its own charm in a way. Comparing to, for example, Wimbledon, it's a complete contrast. Right in Wimbledon, it's different than here. And here is all about entertainment, fun, good energy, good vibes. So if you can feed on that, you'll have a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. I love the atmosphere, especially for the night matches. I've been to both. I've done day sessions where you can wander around the grounds and you can stand next to some of the satellite courts. You can get right there. You can hear the players breathing, for heaven's sakes. Like, that's how close you can get to them. You can hear them talking to themselves or to umpires. But when it comes to the matches that are under the lights, and that was Coco Gauff and Novak Djokovic on Monday, yeah, New Yorkers love to stay up late. The lights are bright. The stadium is loud, especially the farther down you sit toward the court. And there were a bunch of celebrities there, including President Obama, President Michelle Obama. They were there for Coco Gauff and then Novak Djokovic. And it's still early. So it's a raucous atmosphere, especially when you've got star power and great matches. I've seen Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, Novak Djokovic, Serena. I've seen some of the best stars in the game in the last 10 years come through New York, and it is worth the price of admission. All right, you can find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS, our Facebook page too. Who is the last team in the NFL to get a win this season? I love how some of you are leading with your hearts and not your heads.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Stretch on the pitch, swung on, driven to right center field and deep. Headed toward the bullpen, that baby is gone. Home run, Acuna. Number 29. Braves get the lead right back. It's 4-2. Listen to these Braves fans. MVP chants in a visiting ballpark.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Ronald Acuna Jr. had one heck of a night. And I do mean a little bit of everything. This is what people will be talking about on Tuesday morning. Actually, not the fact that the Braves pummeled the Rockies in Denver. 14 runs on 18 hits. Or even if we're speaking of Acuna specifically, 4-for-5. His 29th home run, as you hear on Braves radio. 5 RBI, and this from the leadoff spot. I think he had a couple of stolen bases, too, as he was manning right field on defense. Well, right field is where two fans accosted him. If you've not seen the video, it's on my Twitter, A-Law Radio. Wild scene at Coors Field in Denver where first one fan somehow wriggles his way onto the field and then makes a beeline for Acuna. So he gets to Acuna before the security guards arrive and he bear hugs Ronald Acuna, wraps himself around Acuna, and will not let go. So then late arriving security show up and have to extricate. They have to pry this fan off of Ronald Acuna. And while they're doing that and all their attention is being paid to this one fan as they kind of battle him and tackle him and get him to the ground, another fan comes running out from, essentially from their blind side. They were not watching their six. There are three security guards who are trying to pull this one fan off of Acuna. And as they're doing that, another fan runs from a completely different direction. And get this, there's a security guard running behind him, but he gets to Acuna first. The three guys who are already with Acuna don't see him coming. And so not only does the fan beat the one guard who's chasing him out into to right field to get Acuna, he knocks Ronald over. Thankfully, no one was hurt, but there certainly was potential there. And if I'm Acuna, I appreciate that he kind of shook it off and his teammates tried to make a joke of it. Not funny. Not funny at all. How did those fans get on the field, number one? Number two, how did they not get tackled before they get to the player? Was Coors Field security sleeping? And I don't mean literally, but not paying attention. To me, security at ballparks or NBA arenas, hockey's a little different because of the glass, though you could always drop down onto the tunnel, I suppose, but there is at least the glass. NFL, I mean, we have streakers every now and then. To me, the security should be as vigilant as lifeguards. Do you know what happens if lifeguards aren't paying attention? Or do you know what could happen if lifeguards aren't paying attention and take their eyes off the water? It could be the difference in a swimmer surviving or not. And for those of you who live near an ocean, you know that shark attacks or shark encounters are on the increase. It could be the difference between people getting out of the water in time and not. Lifeguards can't afford, and usually there's a rotation, there's more than one, they're trying to cover a lot of territory, and it's hard to see everything that's happening in the ocean. So we're not talking about one person, but same as security. There's a security team. They should be scanning and be vigilant around the stadium at all times. And the fact that this fan, if you can call him that, was able to get on the field and get to Acuna and bear hug him before security ever got there. I mean, my reaction was holy crap when I first saw it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So Acuna first through an interpreter, and then his manager, Brian Snitker, a couple of other teammates.
I don't know what to say, you know, because the truth is I think the fans are in the stands, and I think at any moment, you know, they could charge the field. And I'd say the important thing is that we're all okay, and I hope that they're okay too.
I thought he handled it well. Just glad he's safe. That's all. You can really come down to is just glad that no one got injured or you know, like I said, Ronnie's safe. He means so much to us. So you're just, you know, you're thankful for nothing that you know seriously happened.
You don't want to see that happen. I know that because you don't know what the people are, you know, what they can do when they come out there. So it's a scary situation.
Yeah, Brian Snitker's right. Obviously, most fans go through a security checkpoint or they even have metal detectors at most venues. But let's just say for the sake of argument, I'm going extreme here. Someone has, I don't know, a pencil that's extremely sharp, or someone manages to bring in some other type of maybe wood or a substance that doesn't get flagged by a metal detector and it's sharp and it's used as a shiv or a knife or something that could stab a player. Or the fan puts the player in a headlock or tackles him. You know, all of these things are within the realm of possibility. We know this because people are crazy. They are. And whether they actually mentally have challenges or whether they're just crazed fanatics over their team, the risks are always there. At the very least, Coors Field security and the Rockies have to answer some questions about how this happened, and then how it took quite a while to get those two bozos off the field. I like the way that Kevin Pillar puts it. This is, it's dangerous to be sure. Yeah, you're excited, or excited is the wrong word, sorry. Yeah, you're relieved that Acuna is okay, but it doesn't mean the situation itself doesn't raise red flags.
I don't think they had any ill intentions. I think that was pretty evident early on still. I mean, we have these rules and regulations in place. We're supposed to feel safe on the field. And, you know, thankfully they weren't there to do any harm. You just never know during those situations, you know, what people's intentions were. Luckily, they were just extreme fans of Ronnie and wanted to get a picture or put their hands on them, but in no way is it appropriate for people to leave the stands, even more to put their hands on someone else. And, you know, you don't ever really expect it. So, you know, me and Mike are just playing catch, and then you kind of look out the corner of your eye and you see some people in the field, security doing their job. And then, you know, when Ronnie fell down, you know, your mindset changes a little bit. You go over there and you don't think about any repercussions. You just want to get them out of there safely and whatever I could do to help. And luckily they were able to, you know, kind of calm the situation down, and thankfully he wasn't hurt in it.
Yeah, that's the relief, but it could have happened. And so, especially when he falls down, your mind goes to, gosh, this could have been a whole lot worse. I know we've talked about this before in the context of fans throwing items on the field, and it happens occasionally in supercharged situations. That's also not okay. And I'll get people push back on me. Oh, what are the chances one of those bottles or cans or something else actually hits a player? Well, it's happened before. Are guys generally injured? No, but we've seen that too. We've seen fans throw glass or throw items that have actually drawn blood from athletes. But more than that, and actually for those of you who remember the extreme case, a crazed fan of Steffi Graf stabbing Monica Seles at a changeover going back, gosh, I don't remember what year that was, but it was one of the biggest stories. It sent ripple effects, shockwaves through all of sports, not just tennis. When Seles was stabbed from behind by a fan who came down to the lowest row of seats near the court. Wow, that was in the early 90s. I mean, that's what can happen when fans kind of lose perspective and get a little bit crazy or in some cases do have some mental health challenges where they don't realize that what they're doing is dangerous or is wrong. So that's an extreme case, but there are examples where you have to kind of draw the line back even farther. And it's never okay for fans to put athletes in danger. And I think furthermore, athletes shouldn't ever have to worry about it. A lot of times in NBA arenas, the fans are right on the court because those seats sell for buku bucks. And in the NFL, you've got some stands that are lower, either in the end zones or in the corners where fans could get on the field. And it's such a big area to cover for security. Baseball, too, I know there's a lot of ground to watch and to cover. But if it means having more people, then you got to do it. Because athletes shouldn't have to fear that fans are on the field or interacting with them. They need to not have that in the back of their minds in any way. I am glad if Acuna doesn't ever think about it again. But I would be shaken by this whole thing. It's crazy. You'll hear a lot more about it today, and we'll talk to you tonight. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom!